Welcome everybody, I'm Jamie Lemura from the Scuderia Ferrari Club, and with me is my host Lee Harrison.
Yep, I'm right here next
to you. How are you, buddy?
Not bad, mate, yourself?
Yeah, good, good. Welcome to our first ever podcast, Negative Camber.
It's going to be a laugh, we'll see what we get up to.
Might even be our last one, I reckon, so if it doesn't go to plan. So, this whole podcast, I guess, is designed to, you know, maybe do something different and reconnect with members in a different way, but also, you know, for friends and family and those that aren't present members of the Scuderia Ferrari Club, an opportunity to learn about what we do, share our experiences, but it also is a chance for a couple of motor racing nerds to talk all things motorsport, I guess. So
exactly, I think as well, like, even for just general motorsport fans, we'll touch on some motorsport stuff. So while it is aimed at most of the guys in the club, we will talk about what's going on in the world of motorsport, and we'll give you our views and opinions on what we think's hot and not.
Yeah, nothing's off limits here, and this is purely opinion based, guys. There's no right or wrong answer, we'll try and give a fair and honest assessment about everything. You know, probably take the piss out of each other in some cases as well. So nothing's off limits, guys, and we do encourage listeners and that, you know, if you want to talk about some stuff or want us to cover any topics or anything of that nature, just reach out to us either individually or on the club Facebook page, and we'll definitely do it. The aim is to try and do this monthly, but if it's proving to be something that's quite popular, it might happen more often, but depends on time commitments and stuff like that. So, Lee, we had to drag you back from Q8 for this. You got wind of the opportunity, and you're pretty much down tools over there, and made your way back over here. But what were you doing over there for?
We were just right over there running a motorsport facility. So for those from Adelaide who are familiar with the Bend, where I was previously, there's a new facility in Q8 that's been built to a high standard as well. Level one. Formula One spec track and a grade one motorcycle track as well, so we can host MotoGP and all forms of motorsport. So yeah, it was a pretty exciting little challenge, and yeah, got wind of this podcast and had to come back and you know, take on COVID and all the traveling in between. So it's a pleasure to be here. It's been good to be home with the family and spend some time with them.
Yep.
But look, I can't say that I would be, you know, I would be lying if I said I wasn't excited to go back and keep going on in Q8. It's a beautiful place and lovely people. But in the meantime, we'll keep busy in Adelaide and get on with life.
How'd you compare the facility over at Q8 to, say, compared to the Bend?
It's hard to compare both. The Bend is still evolving and developing, and new things are coming online all the time at the Bend, where Q8 was built and finished, and then they opened. So we've had obviously different challenges in Q8 than the Bend, but they're on par with each other. Both amazing facilities, both been a pleasure to work at and for. So yeah, just really excited to keep on that train.
Yeah, cool. And look, this week is a special week for the Ferrari Club. It had its fifth birthday earlier this week. So woo, streamers. It's been a journey, you know, and kudos to Club President Adam. This was his dream. It was his baby. I've known Adam for, I'd say at least 10 or 11 years. And the first time I met him and through my brother and stuff like that, it was, you know, who the fuck's this bloody Ferrari fanatic? Like, this guy's just full on.
Ferrari mad.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'd go to the Melbourne Grand Prix and all that sort of stuff, and you'd be sitting in the grandstand, you'd look up in the V8 supporters paddock, and you see this lone, tan, 6-foot dude with a Ferrari shirt, and it didn't take you anything more than 10 seconds to figure out who it was. And you kind of sit there in the stands thinking to yourself, how the fuck did he get there? Like,
all the little wormholes that he'd found his way through.
Yeah, exactly.
Up in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah, exactly. But this club's ethos, I think, I've been very fortunate to be a foundation member of it, more or less since the start. You have too, I think.
Yeah.
And, you know, I reckon the ethos of this club has more or less been opportunity. It's brought people, I suppose, back together. I mean, I've had friends that, you know, I'd been sort of kept in touch since high school or primary school that have become members of it. We had heaps of good fun with, you know, the Hyatt Kart series, which we'll touch on shortly. It's formed new friendships, so guys that have never met each other before have become good mates and
kind of, you know, like us too, really.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But you know, and well, yeah, we met at Paraka.
We met at Paraka while we were looking to host the first round of ever of you guys catching up for a snag in a race. I don't think it was ever intended to be a championship at that point. You guys were just coming to have a laugh as the club, and that was our first introduction.
I knew we were going to be good mates when you had Biscuits there.
Yeah,
the myth, the legend.
Biscuits. We'd like to get him on one time if this is successful enough.
Yeah, yeah,
that might be a special feature length episode where, you know, maybe 2 or 3 hours deep.
Oh my, the banter between you guys and Biscuits, it's he's a legend. I love Biscuits, but has he trimmed the beard or has he still got it?
Look, it's hard to say with him. 1 week it's gone, and then, you know, 2.5 hours later, it's back to full length again. He grows facial hair faster than I grow real hair.
But no, we'll endeavor to have, you know, special guests on, you know, club members, you know, connections in motorsport. Todd Hazelwood's a good mutual friend of the both of ours, and he's really keen to come on board and do a couple of pods. We might even try and, you know, sneak a maybe special visit at Tail and Bend or something like that. We'll see. But it'll be, you know, the opportunities that have come from this club, I can speak on behalf of myself. It's, you know, haven't been to the Formula One yet to do the paddock stuff, which was Adam's baby, but that'll happen pretty soon. But for me, it was go-karting. I've always loved motorsport. I've always wanted, my dream job was to be a racing driver. It still is. And I was very fortunate to, I suppose, start the Hyatt Kart series in terms of participate in it, and then later run it for a couple of years, but then also get my own proper club kart and start racing in the in the club team, which was formed only a couple of years ago. So for me, it's an opportunity to live my dream, and I think for Lee, there's a great story, I guess, you want to share when you got to meet your idol.
Yeah, obviously through the club, we went to Melbourne and went to the Formula One. And Adam, I think it was one of the first years that he had organised to meet up with the Ferrari team and get into the paddock. And my idol, Kimi Raikkonen, was still driving for Ferrari at that time. And yeah, just being part of that scene, being in the background of the paddock and the people you see, the people you meet. I was lucky enough to get to meet Kimi and have a quick chat and get some stuff signed, which was really cool. Awesome guy. I think it'd be really good on a Friday night after a couple of vodkas, I think. And
did you manage to get more than 3 words out of him?
I got 4, I think. So, yeah. But he had to do most of the talking because I was too gobsmacked. And we were joking during the week that I still haven't really learned how to talk since. But I'm obviously proving that fact to be wrong. So, but that was obviously just come straight through, you know, the club and being a part of it all. And the opportunities are there if you want to get a hold of them. That's for sure.
Yeah, like you know, there's also it's not just the club that's based on go karts. I mean, that's certainly very important part. The Hyatt Kart Championship is probably the most unique aspect about it. It was the cornerstone of the club, and it still is. And for those that don't know, you may have seen it, but the club runs a championship series, which is a combination of, we modelled it on the V8 Supercar series, really, where it was just a combination of some sprint formats and also a couple of enduros. And it's evolved over time, where you just had like an elimination type championship series that resulted in a top 10 for a club title. And then we went down the path of two groups and then a light and a heavy champion. But it's a chance for members or people that love the higher kart scene or racing go-karts but don't have the opportunity to race the proper stuff to get out there and just get their motor racing fix. And it's all about fun and enjoyment. There's a little bit of white line fever, I reckon, that creeps in.
It's only motorsport. Everyone's going to get the white line fever. We all say we're not out there to win and we all just want to have some fun. But as soon as you throw that helmet on and lace her up, it's a different story. The ego kicks in and you want to win and you want to beat your friends. You want to beat your family. You want to beat everybody.
Yeah, exactly right. And it's funny how it all starts where it's all, you know, everyone's all friends and it's all friendly and there's banter and that type of thing. And as the season goes on and the competition starts to get more intense, it's normally the last couple of rounds where you can really feel the tension kick up. And then if the championship finals is a really close event, it's actually it's a really good day to be a part of. But we go all out, facility depending. We do champagne podium celebrations and try and put on a good spread. COVID was really difficult last year for the high kart series in the club. We were all affected by it, I guess. It's back, and the committee have actually, it's the longest championship that they've had. They've gone 7 rounds, which is awesome. It's kind of spread evenly across the year. And there's a really good combination between endurance events and also sprint format races as well. So there's plenty of spots available, guys. The first race is going to be at Jepps Cross on the 28th, I think, of March.
28th or 29th.
Yeah, something like that. Yep. It's on the Sunday.
Yeah.
And it's a 7 p.m. start, I believe. And it's going to be an hour and a half enduro. So heaps of spots available. And also for the rest of the series as well. So if... don't be the goner generation. And when I say the goner generation, you get all these people that say, oh, I'm going to do this and I'm going to do that. And in the end, they end up doing fuck all. So, put your money where your mouth is. Have a bit of fun. Meet some new friends and you know, get out there and enjoy yourselves, guys, and support the high kart series. But
for those that are thinking, maybe this isn't for me, you know, the competition is going to be fierce. It is, of course. It's a competition. There's guys that, you know, take it pretty seriously. And for those that are thinking, oh, it's past me, I'm too old, I can't do it, I'd just like to draw our attention to the fact that the reigning endurance championship winner is a 60-plus-year-old lady.
Oh, it was, yeah.
So you can't say that it's not for you. I mean, I'm biased. She happens to be my mum, but, come and take us on. Like, we need some more challenges.
Yeah, oh, look, it's... Roz is an awesome story, being the lone female... representative, which is great. We need more of those. But she loves to get her elbows in and drive. And you can tell the apple didn't fall far from the tree in terms of driving skill, mate. She's chip off the old block there. But
doesn't that work when it's the other way around? If there's a father son, mother son, mother daughter duo, I've had to teach her these things. Sometimes they say you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but I've taught her well. I think I've had some good help, but she's picked it up along the way,
mate. There's we were talking just before we went on air. It was the endurance race last year where you and your mum teamed up for the final to get her over the line. And, yeah, you put on a clinic in that first stint, mate. It was epic to watch. It was just... you'd been karting earlier that day in your Gillard, hadn't you?
Yeah, I'd been out at the track at Bolivar for most of the day, actually.
You looked it when you came.
Yeah, sunburned, was red and raw all over and... Still, I've done about 150 laps out at Bolivar in the 100, and then still knuckled down for another 75 or something at Jepps Cross.
You definitely made us all look like amateurs that day, mate. Yeah. I was sitting on the sidelines watching it, and looking at the timing screens was awesome. Like, it's like, it was just the best. So
I think I still ended up with the fastest lap of the month for that month. So
there was actually, it's funny you say that, it was about 3 or 4 of our karts in that race.
Yeah.
That were actually within the top 10 fastest times for that month.
Yeah, we had some solid conditions. I think it rained earlier in the day from memory.
And then it rained at the end as well. It rained
at the end as well. But we had some solidly good racing conditions, which was really nice.
Yeah, but guys, if you're interested, and girls, if you're interested in taking up a membership, it's a one-off fee of $70-odd, I believe it is. If you go to the club website or look onto the Facebook page, it's sfcadelaide.com.au. And have a look around. You'll get a membership pack direct from Ferrari. So yeah, I should touch on that too. This is not just a bunch of guys that have made a club in tribute to Ferrari. This is actually an officially linked fan club from the Ferrari Formula One team and the manufacturer itself. So any membership packs and bits and pieces that you do get are actually flown out direct from Ferrari themselves. So I also want to get the opportunity to apologize to all existing members that did purchase a membership pack last year. Ferrari did promise a watch that was to come with the membership pack, and they'd sent the membership packs out first, and the watches still haven't actually arrived. So Adam has actually been on top of that. They have assured us that the watches are going to be distributed from Italy in March. So with a bit of luck, those that did purchase a membership pack will get their watches pretty soon. So I'll get that out there now. But look, the club does live events in terms of watching F1 races together. Obviously, you've got the karting stuff. There's a tipping championship over the course of the F1 season, which is just as competitive. We have experimented with an E-Series championship where you've got Xbox and PS4 platforms, I think, PC as well. You do a bit of sim racing, don't you, mate?
Yeah, I'm on the sim racing. I don't generally do too much on the Xbox or the PS4. I'm all PC-based. Use a different platform than what you guys currently use for the E-Series, which is what keeps me out of it. But I do a lot of iRacing, so I'm on there. I run a league every Monday night, do a few special events with the league as well. So we've got one coming up this Monday night with some TCR guys, which will be fun and exciting. And then we're back into our season 5 of our Club Day Masters Championship as of Monday the 12th, I'm going to assume, or something like that. So yeah, it's really good fun.
You stream all your races online though, don't you?
Yeah, so we stream. We broadcast. We've got a company on board, SimSpeed Esports Network.
Yep.
And we stream to YouTube, to Slipstream Motorsport Facebook page. I stream to my personal Facebook page. I'm trying to do some Twitch stuff as well, so you can see my driver's eye view. But yeah, I think I just need to do a couple of upgrades to the PC to handle all of that processing that it needs to take. But it's good fun. Like, really enjoy it. It's challenging. Mm-hmm. The level is absolutely ridiculous. You really got to. I come off sweatier from a sim session than I do driving at the Kart Mania. It's crazy. So it's good fun. And the E Series is something to definitely get into if you have got the PS4 or the Xbox and you want to get into it. Definitely, the challenge is there for sure.
Yeah, yeah. It reminds me a lot of when V8 supercar drivers were doing their E-Series last year, and I'm a big follower of Below the Bonnet, so shout out to Michael Caruso and David Reynolds if they actually bothered to listen to this podcast. But I listened to it religiously, and I remember David Reynolds was saying that he was finding it difficult. He hated it, but the amount of time and effort that they were locked into their sims, he had back problems because of it physically. It actually fucked him up. So
it takes it out of you. It's not, people say you're just sitting in a chair. Well, pardon me, you are in a chair just in the lounge room. But the guys that have the real good sims, it's like being in a real car. You've got to put heaps of brake pressure in to get the right brake force, and then your throttle application, you still got to think about the thing as well. Like, you can't be making mistakes, otherwise you're going to get eaten up. So when they take it that seriously, like you guys like Gizzy and Di Pasquale, they took it really seriously. Scott McLaughlin, he still jumps on the sim all the time over in America. So some of these guys take it really, really seriously, and it's quite a challenge.
Yeah. But no, guys, definitely get on it. It's a fun club. It's a chance to share your passion for... You don't need to own a Ferrari, but it's a chance for you to share your passion about Formula One, motorsport, and all things red. So definitely get on it and support the club. Right, now, so we get to the juicy stuff.
We're talking karting. We were talking karting. We'll get back to karting.
Yeah.
You guys had the first round of Festival State Cup last weekend at Monado.
Yeah.
Let's hear about that and how that went, and get your thoughts on how it all played out.
Yeah, well, I guess to preface that a little bit, the club runs a racing team, which is purely for Karting Australia events. A bit of a plug here, special thanks to Patrizzi Corson, Matt Hall and DR Karts Australia for their support. Torini as well. They helped us get off the ground starting this project. We race club events, and last year was, fair to say, a baptism of fire. We had a team of about 6 or 7 guys, and they decided to go on their own and do their own team, and so we ended up with a team of about 3 of us. Yeah. But for the first couple of probably the first year and a half, it was really more about excelling off track more than on it. And it took the pressure off us and as a team, and allowed us to ply our trade and ply our craft, because in the early stages, it was a shit show. I'm not going to lie. We were well out of our depth.
It's a big jump coming from a high kart championship into suddenly, you know, you're racing against guys that have done this, you know, since birth almost, you know, since I was 7 or 8 years old. And it, you can, it's not something you can just pick up and hope to be fast at. You've really got to, you've got to study it.
Yeah. So we, towards the end of last year, Adam had struck up a relationship with Matt Hall. And we'd seen Matt race a four-stroke in one of his events in the DR car and just completely smashed him.
Brained him.
Over the sort of towards the end of last year, once the season had ended, Adam and I had sort of sat down and we sort of made the decision that we really wanted to start to excel on track and really start to make a fist of it. And we both run SQ go-karts, so the much unloved SQ.
They were loved. They were, you know, they had the good intention of being, you know, a cheap entry-level go-kart to replace the ever-growing European market and ever getting more and more expensive. But that's the go-kart that I, you know, I took that go-kart away for you guys and we turned it upside down. And it's not... It responded and it's done well. So I think we surprised a few people up at Mount Gambier with how, you know, the pace it actually has.
Mm.
It's just about unlocking it from you guys now.
Yeah, pretty much. And so, as Lee touched on, I'd sort of gone on a bit of a personal development path because, you know, I had done a fair bit of driving with the go-kart and Adam for with different commitments wasn't able to do all of the events. But from my own experience where I had a vision in my head in terms of what I wanted from the go-kart and you guys pretty much turned it into reality. And then, so Mount Gambier was kind of the start and of where, which direction we wanted to take it from an engineering point of view. And Adam, Matt, myself, more or less went from front to back to front, whichever way you want to look at it. And we had done some testing and some driver coaching with Matt over the off season. And we went, the first round of the club season was at Southern Go-Kart, which was the Southern Meltdown a couple of weeks ago.
Yep.
And we knew from our testing a couple of weeks prior to that, that we were in with a really good show. From lap times, we'd made up about 1.5 seconds in lap time compared to when we raced there last year, which in anyone's language is massive.
Massive, huge.
And that's in the heavy class. Yep. So we were... Anthony was the only one that was going to race that day, and we were quietly confident of, you know, putting on a good show. And to his credit, he drove the wheels off it. So we thought, right, we're going to be in with a good chance. So we go to Monado, and Saturday was promising. We were setting times comfortably, which would have put us in the top, sort of around about sixth for the same event that we did in August last year. And then come Sunday, Nico, who's in the medium class, he put on a clinic, put on an absolute demonstration. Yeah. It was really good to watch, but we struggled. We struggled in terms of, when I say struggled, like we were hitting our lap times in terms of like, in terms of matching what we did in practice, but we were nowhere.
Yeah.
Like we, both Anthony and I were within tenths or hundredths of each other in terms of lap speed. And I'm the heaviest driver in the field. I weighed in at about 192.5 kilos, right? And the weight limit in terms of the starting point for heavy is 165.
Yeah, we were talking off air before we came online, and you know, that's part of the problem there at Monado. The track is so horsepower dependent that any weight advantage you're giving to your competitors, it's just going to absolutely boggle you with how much time you're going to lose there. If you're giving up 30 odd kilos to your competitors, you're out by nearly a second, 1.4 seconds there basically.
Yeah,
it's just you're pushing shit uphill before you even put the go-kart on the track.
Yeah, it more or less felt like that, to be honest. It's there's nothing more depressing than knowing that you're driving well, and the kart felt great. Like it was actually, it's probably not the best way to put it, but it was actually enjoyable to drive.
Yeah,
like it did what I wanted it to do. It pointed wherever I wanted it to go. I actually, for the first time, had negative camber at the front, whereas last year I was running at a plus six. So. Yeah. To explain it to the non-go-karters, essentially we ran a really wicked setup last year where I had no camber adjusters on the front, so I couldn't turn the wheels in and tilt them to make it handle better. So I had to run a narrow rear end and a wider front and had to steer from the rear instead of from the front. So this year has all been about going completely the opposite, and I've almost had to relearn to drive it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like when I took the thing to Mount Gambier, I had to make that many changes to it to get it to go the way I wanted it to go and the way I knew it should go. I couldn't understand how you guys were driving it. For the thing didn't stop, it didn't steer, it didn't go where you wanted it to go. And then when you did actually get some sort of feedback from the brakes, they were locked up and flying past the end of the straight. So it was a lot of work to get it back to a drivable go-kart.
Yeah, well, both go-karts had glazed brakes, brake pads. So they were the original pads from when the kart was actually, when we got the kart. So that was over 10 years old.
Oh, that's even longer than that. More like 2003 or 2004. Well, there you go. So that was 17 or 16 years old.
And I'd been complaining for probably, a good 12 months that I had a lot of travel in the pedal and I couldn't feel it. And towards the end of last year, it was you didn't know whether you'd have brakes at the end of the corner or not. So much, much different this year. There's a pedal there. It's still a bit long in terms of travel, but, you know, at least I can... it's funny because I can actually control shit now. So...
when you've driven shit for so long, you should get used to controlling it.
Exactly. But no, it's a good example is... Southern Go-Kart Club, turn one, the famed turn one, you're going down the front straight and you've got this really hard braking point and it's a 90 degree left-hand corner followed by a really sharp right. So last year with the SQ, I'd hit the brake and I'd be sort of just inside the curb and there'd be a bit of travel, and then if you had too much pressure on it, all of a sudden you'd lock the rears and you'd lose the rear in the cart and it's gone. This year, I can actually come into it, and if I come in really hot and go a little bit deeper just to test the waters, I can actually lock the rear and just turn it in, and it follows, and I can just drag it out. Benefits of camber. Yeah, predictability. So, but yeah, no. In getting back to the team aspect, Nico. Nick Romeo is my cousin. He races in the medium class, and that was actually a really tight contest all day. They had a state champion that was in there. I'm just bringing his name up now. Where is he? Ben Edwards was his name. And so Ben was really quick. He was really swift.
He's been racing for ages though. Like he should be fast. You know. If you look at the entry list for mediums and you see him on it, you think he's going to be the one to catch in four strokes for sure.
Yeah. But I mean, I'm looking at the times now, and you know, there was probably they started the lights ahead of the mediums, which made sense. And the light class was only four carts, you know, and two of them were experienced campaigners. You know, well, when I say experienced, they've been racing for a good 12 months. And Brock Harrison, to his credit, put on a clinic. He was untouchable, and I really feel sorry for the kid because he. The cart shit itself in the final when it really counted.
Yeah.
But he was miles clear, and Jeremy Smith was there to pick up the pieces. So a bit of a Bradbury.
Be in it to win it.
Yeah, exactly. You know. So, but then the other two guys that were racing in the lights were rookies. Like they were just learning, applying their trade and craft. So the medium battle was really tight all day. Like you know, it was pretty much a battle between Joe Baroni, Ben Edwards, Nick Romeo, and John Sicuro, ex club member, was kind of there or thereabouts. In the final, you know, so it was really, really close. Like, and it was actually really good quality racing. Like, there was no. I want to say paint swapping. Like, you know, there was you know, the riding on
paint swapping. Rubbing's racing.
So yeah, yeah, but it wasn't. There wasn't stupidity.
Yeah.
Like there was no cart at any stage of the day that came back with you know bloody Adelaide bench International stuff. Raceway all over the bloody side pods.
Yeah.
And bench shit.
Yeah.
But when it counted, it was the final was pretty much a tussle between Ben and Nick.
Yeah.
And Ben took the chocolates, but. So we were really happy with that, but the hard work for what we did in the off season was reflected in qualifying, in the mediums where Nico just put on a clinic. He'd set a lap that was faster than he was faster than pretty much anyone else in the field, outside of Brock Harrison in the light.
Yeah, right.
So Brock had put in a 39.3, and Nico comes out with a 39.7. and it was daylight more or less to everyone else.
Yeah, that's a good job by Nick.
Yeah, it was really good. So, and I mean, that's fresh tyres, I guess, as well. He'd bedded some in the practice in the morning, and he came out with fresh rubber and just put on a show. So, no, that was really good to watch. And then, of course, for us in the heavies, it was... so, Anthony was probably the marginally faster over the day. He weighed in at 10 kilos lighter, but I'd sort of said to him that he was probably a couple of tenths quicker than me and over the course of practice and stuff like that, which was fine by me. So the original plan was to follow Anth, and then he was sporting a new visor and hadn't put the anti-fog on. And when we got there, for practice was actually first thing in the morning on Sunday, was 10 degrees.
Yeah,
it was right. So it was pretty cold. So we were stuck behind him. I was stuck behind him, and I didn't want to sort of send it in there in practice and make a goose out of us. So I sort of sat behind him, and then we pulled into the pits, and I'm like, mate, what the hell was going on? Like, Adam's at the end of the pit lane shaking his head going, and we're thinking, we looked at the times, and I'm like, fuck. So we put our heads together and put it in qualifying, and we were a couple of tenths off what we'd set in practice the day before. And then we looked at the times and we're like, fuck, this is going to be a long day.
Yep.
Like, we, we were there or thereabouts, but there were other guys that were just tenths ahead.
Yeah. But you got some good guys in the field, though. Pittum and Will Rowe and guys that have been racing a long time.
Yeah.
It's you guys that have,
It was funny because I don't know what was happening over the course of the day with the marshals, and that'll be my rant later on, but they were jumbling up the grids and all that sort of stuff too. So what they were doing with the heavy class was that they'd pitted the Supermax, which is the more powerful four-stroke motor, compared with the heavies.
Yeah.
And it's a 5 horsepower more motor, and it's electric start versus pull cord like what we've got. But they were actually starting the Supermaxes behind us. Fuck knows why.
Yeah.
Right. I mean,
that much horsepower.
And I liken it to this. It's like, in the early days of Bathurst, when you had the multiple classes, right, the fastest cars were always at the front.
Yeah.
Right. They always started at the front. Right. Never have you seen, right, say 2 litre production cars or whatever, and then you've got Brock and Johnson coming back from the rear.
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
Why they started the Supermaxes at the rear is beyond me. Right. But all it did was for the stragglers like me and a few of the other guys that were sort of off the pace, they were racing us, and you let them through because you're in no competition with them. But it just happened to be at a point where they're in the middle of a braking zone, or you're coming through a corner, and for someone like myself, I have to not only be so precise with how I drive, but I can't afford to lose time because I've got 30 kilos of fucking mass that I've got to bloody propel forward again, as well, and pick up again.
Yep.
So every millisecond counts for me. I can't afford to make a mistake. And you see these guys just in the distance and you give yourself false hope that you're going to catch them, right? But when you've got other guys coming through, it's a shit show.
It is. It's the problem with multi-class racing when they start faster classes behind you, though. It's always going to happen. And what were the times like with Supermax versus four-stroke heavy?
I'll bring that up. But what I was getting with guys like Dave Rinaldi and Paul and stuff like that was that they were almost like the marshals. Like, they, when I say the marshals, they put out the start grid, and Paul was really dictating terms. Now, you know him far better than me. From all reports, he's a pretty good, experienced driver. Yeah. So you take what he says with, you know, a fair bit of weight. But it was interesting, this is the way that they would sort of dictate how things would go, you know, and put a stop to proceedings, and they'd have to reshuffle all the grid and all that sort of stuff. So I don't know whether it was KA that had done it, but it was a shit show. Like, you'd sit there and you're idling for maybe, you know, 20, 30 seconds, a minute, 2 minutes, and you think, oh shit, here goes the clutch, it's overheating and all this sort of stuff and whatever. So they would have done themselves a big, you know, big favour had they run the quicker carts up at the front,
yeah,
right, and left the heavies at the back to sort out their own shit. Stuff. But yeah, it actually resulted in a couple of accidents, which I was fortunate to avoid twice, whereas Anthony came off second best. Yeah. So... And when you're shoveling shit uphill all day, it's, you know, it just adds to it.
Yeah, it can't be an accident when you're already pushing shit uphill.
Yeah, exactly right. So, Supermax times.
Luke says, you know, there's potential there and there's stuff to build from. So,
well, yeah, look,
when we get to a track where there's not as much momentum being critical, we'll put on a bit more of a show.
Well, yeah, look, and that's the thing. Like, it's easy to be downcast about it. because you kind of feel like you're no man's land. But I actually think that the true pace was what we showed at Southerns.
Yeah.
I really do. And the kart was great to drive, but it really it's prompted me to get off my ass and start to lose some weight. So I've actually got a diet that I started. I was challenged by the CEO of Tindo Solar, free plug guys. And there's $500 on it.
Oh.
So I haven't actually put a figure
as to how much. That'll pay for the new seat that you'll need when you lose all that
money. new race suit, new seat, new everything. But I kind of figured, I was pretty downbeat on Monday. And we sort of said, oh, do we go down the path of getting a new motor? And I thought it's just cheaper to lose weight and healthier that way than spending an extra $1,000 on 5 more horsepower.
You'll be able to kart for longer if you're healthier. So
yeah, exactly.
It'll prolong your enjoyment.
Mm, Supermax times. So the top guys like Bowden and Ben and Dave were sort of around the high 39. So let's say 39.6, the 39.8 and the 39.7. And Tim Murphy, he's gone to Supermax now.
Yep.
And he popped in, as an example, a 39.3 in the first heat of the day.
Yeah, right, okay. Right. So there's definitely a speed advantage there.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. By the final, for example, again, Tim's popping in 39.3s. The only person that was in the 39s in the normal guys was Dave Rinaldi with a 39.8. The rest were all 40 flats. Yeah. So
might be something to look at for the future of the gridding of those classes if it gets a bit more popular anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. But no, that was the recap of the race team. Where in terms of the next event, they've got we're not going to be doing the Festival Stake Cup in Whyalla. It's just
it's a good weekend away.
It would be.
It's a good track.
Yeah, if I didn't have kids, it would be a great weekend away.
That's right. bring them with us. We'll take all of our wives and they can go swimming at the beach.
Yeah, but no, I think as a team, we're going to be probably, if not May at Monado, it's likely going to be June.
Yep.
Between the Easters and schedules and all that sort of stuff, it's just been too hard. So it gives me, what are we on? March, April, May, 3 or 4 months to get my shit together. So we'll see. We'll see how that all pans out. But
it'll be the real test.
Mm, yeah, absolutely. Because then that means we come back to Southerns. So by that stage, it'd be AKC and all that sort of stuff. I think that would have happened by then.
Probably. Yeah.
It's good. This year's, I think there's a lot of emphasis on four stroke because Karting Australia have actually included it on state and national championships, which I think is fantastic. They can't keep their head in the sand for long. I mean, the four stroke class in terms of quantity of entries is the biggest by a fair margin.
100%. It's good, cheap, affordable racing. Like, you know, I had the conversation with Paul and with Will in Mount Gambier when we all raced it, that it's, you know, we spent barely any money and we had a bloody good time doing it. So for me, I've got my Formula 100 that I'd love to race, you know, as my main money taker.
Yep.
And really spend time and money in making that go fast. But the four stroke, you can buy something off the shelf really cheap, really easy, and you don't spend any money maintaining it, or, you know, barely any money maintaining it or racing it. So it's good that you can get out there and race against 20, 25 guys every weekend, and you know that you're going to get a field. It's hard these days. You race tag, you spend $500 or $600 every race meeting, and you might get a field of four or five. It's hard work. So
yeah, although, you know what? Tag actually had some pretty good numbers. The tag 125 restricted medium, I reckon, that and light. The restricted class had some. They had probably close to, say, 20 between the two classes, and they combined them. It was the open that they had next to nothing in it, which is where it's all, you know, balls to the wall, more or less. But the juniors have got heaps of numbers. The cadets and that sort of thing were good to see.
That's good. Progress coming through.
Yeah, but no, you know what? It was good to do a proper state championship round again. I mean, we never got to run it last year.
Yeah.
Because of COVID and stuff like that. And Monado put on a pretty good show. They had on track commentary and all that sort of stuff, which was good.
It's always good to add to the enjoyment for you when you're in the pit.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And, we got to see the best and the worst of two-stroke. There was a pretty bad accident that happened, I think, in the third heat of one of the two-stroke classes where they had to actually red flag it.
Yeah, right.
So there was a tussle coming. So, there's a downhill section at Monado, and then there's a fast right-hander that leads into a really hard stop. And I mean, there's probably an actual name for it, but I call it Cowtex Chase because that's what it reminds me of, where you're going downhill and you've got this fast right hand and you've got to sort of sit wide and then you're on the anchors really quickly.
Yeah.
So it was around that section there that there was a spin, and they'd gone into the dirt. And I mean, the grass there for this meet was dry. So if you'd go online, there was dust and crap everywhere. So, and for whatever reason, I think there was that much dust, they couldn't see the carts. And apparently there was a cart that went straight through the other one.
Yeah, right.
Good. No, so, you know, the kid, I think, didn't wave his hands or whatever to try and stop. But, you know, he didn't know what the hell was going on, I think. So they put a stop to it. And there was, you know, a bit of finger pointing and all that sort of stuff in the pits and stuff like that. But they all got their stuff sorted out after that. But, yeah, that was... That was the weekend.
Day out at Monado.
It was. I was buggered by the time I got back. I just left the cart in the trailer, backed it up, and that was it. Yeah. So
it's a long day. We drive in the morning, we drive afterwards.
Well, the guys actually stayed over. They stayed at Murray Bridge, and I drove out and spent some time with the kids here at home, and then came back in the morning. So I'd been up from 4 a.m. that day and had come in at 6:30 and helped, you know, reset up everything. Yep. And so I was shagged by the time I came back.
Big day.
Yeah, big day. But no, it's all good. We'll be back. We'll come back fighting, and it's good fun day out, you know.
Absolutely.
As well. So yeah. Right. F1.
It's coming.
It is coming. It's
coming.
End of
this month.
Yeah. They've had some season some launches and stuff like that. So of course we'll start with Ferrari. They haven't actually officially released the SF21, but they've gone onto a pretty good media campaign.
Yeah.
They released a video, I think, it was about a 20-minute video last week of Mattia Binotto talking about the up-and-coming season, etc. And I'm excited. I really am. Like,
you think they've got all their stuff sorted? You think they're going to be a contender?
Well, for those that don't really know about Formula One, because of COVID, they actually put a freeze on development this year. So a lot of these guys are running last year's cars. So, but with a slight twist. So because they'd put a freeze for COVID, they were actually meant to run the new regulations this year.
Yeah.
And because of COVID and all that sort of stuff, they put the brakes on it and pushed it back for next year. But in the meantime, McLaren had already were on with Renault and moved over to Mercedes. And so if they had to have a development freeze, they couldn't refit the motor into the old chassis. So they had to pretty much redo the back end. And so the FIA and F1 had pretty much said, look, all right, cool, we'll give you guys 3 development tokens that you've got to use. And you can use it on any facet that you feel that you need on the car. All right. So last year's Ferrari engine was a dog's breakfast. Yep. Yeah. So whatever happened between 2019 and 2020 with that under the table deal with the FIA resulted in a shitload less horsepower. And they pretty much had to run all the way through of last year with trimmed aerodynamics. So they had to take rear wing off to give it straight line speed. Yep. But all that did was just destabilize the rear end. And that played a lot in Vettel's poor performances because he's very much a rear-end sensitive driver.
Yeah.
He's got to have the rear end. He's got to have that feel in order for him to do his best work. Whereas Leclerc is more of seat of the pants. You know, he's
drive the wheels off the thing.
Yeah, he's for me. He's look. I love Charles. He's very much I'd say your stereotypical classic Ferrari driver that the Italians love.
Yeah.
You know, he's balls to the wall. Passion, fire, you know, just, you know, and when you can outdrive a car that's really substandard and put some of the qualifying performances that he would put in there, the Italians froth over that shit. They love it.
They're mad for it.
Yeah. And then, of course, he didn't do himself any disservice by winning Monza in 2019 and keeping Mercedes at bay as well. But for me, I love Carlos Sainz. I love him. Not because he races with 55. But which, you know,
your number,
my number. But I reckon he's one of those guys that will he's a cross between a Leclerc where there's a bit of flair, but he reminds me a lot of Prost as well, where he's very calculated, very smooth. Well, his nickname is Smooth Operator, but he's a very smooth driver, super quick, But he's also one of those guys that will actually get the team right behind him. Yeah. You know, he'll carry him. And I think he'll actually give Leclerc a big run for his money this year. That's my prediction. I don't know where Ferrari are going to sit in the pecking order. A lot of it will come down to how good that motor is.
Yeah.
But then also how much emphasis they put on development for this year's car, because it's all new rules and regulations and stuff next year. I do know that they started tests. They've done some media days and stuff like that. Ferrari are doing a lot of marketing behind Carlos. It's mainly because I think they're playing off that humor role that he had with Lando Norris and stuff as well. So I think they're definitely going to improve, without a doubt. How much? Who knows?
I think they're still in that mix for fourth in the championship. I think there's a few teams that are going to be in front of them. You're going to put your Mercedes and Red Bull are definitely still going to be in front of them. I think McLaren are going to surprise a few people this year. I think with that Mercedes power plant in the back, I think they're a strong shot for third, maybe even second. It depends on how good this Red Bull is that comes out.
Yep.
And then I think you've got the likes of Aston Martin and Ferrari that are in that battle for fourth in the championship. It'll be interesting to see how the Aston Martin branding comes out. It's going to be pretty close to the Mercedes, I think, so that could be a surprise package as well.
Yeah, when they so the teams that have launched have been Alfa Romeo, Haas, obviously Mercedes for
Aston Martin,
and Williams overnight as well.
Yeah,
And Alpine and McLaren as well.
Yeah.
So a majority of the field, there's only maybe two or three teams. Red Bull, they launched as well. So. Yeah, it's did you see the Williams color scheme overnight?
I did see a small glimpse of it. I haven't taken it into detail, but it looked fancy.
Yeah, it looked pretty schmick. I don't know, it's so radically different from any other Williams
livery
in the past for a long, long time, and I'm like, whoa, shit. Like, you'd have to see it in TV.
I wonder if that's what they're going to keep, though, if it's just a launch livery. We see that a lot with teams. You know, they launch and put one of these crazy paints on it to hide. I mean, Williams are going to have to make a pretty big step for anyone to want to copy what they're doing. But, you know, they use these special paints to hide their lines and their curves of their car. So
it's pioneered by Red Bull, really.
Yeah, it is, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, look, it's... There wasn't a lot of sponsors on there at all.
No.
Like, it was, which was sad to see. And they had biscuits, not biscuits, as in, but they had, in terms of points, they had zero.
Donut.
Biscuits probably wishes he was in Williams as well. I think you're right with McLaren. I mean, they're on the up.
Yeah.
But I hope they. You just hope for, say, Ricciardo's sake that, you know, they've had to redesign pretty much the whole rear end of that car. And I mean, if they've buggered that up, right, and all of a sudden it's poor aerodynamically in the rear,
it could be a shit box.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You know, which you hope not.
I would seriously hope not.
Yeah. But your mate Kimi still is going around again for Alpha.
He's
going to
have another go. It's good to see. You know, one day he's going to retire. Then I'm going to have to pick a new favourite driver in Formula One. But luckily he's keeping me fresh, so I'll get my Sauber merch. We'll keep following him.
Ridiculously expensive Sauber merch. Yeah, the Alfa merch. It's
the price you pay for Kimi, I suppose.
Well, I mean, I'm an Alfa boy at heart as well. So it's I had two. I own two. My brother owns one as well. But I like what they've done with the livery this year, where they've kind of reversed what they did last year. Yeah, it looks really, really smart. And they really concentrated on the front end of that car this year, from what I've read.
Massive.
And Red Bull, I think, themselves with Perez will be, he had such a shock when he went to McLaren. It was probably too early for him.
Way too early. It was his second or third year in Formula One.
Yeah, it was a shit show. I think now that he's got this chance, you'll probably see a different Perez.
Exactly.
And I really think he'll give Verstappen a run for his money.
I think Verstappen will still have him, but I think he's going to do a lot more than he did when he was with McLaren.
Yeah.
He was way too young when he went to McLaren. He had, I think it was Alonso as a teammate when he went to McLaren. Button as a teammate. And Button stamped all over him. He got into his head and made him look quite silly, which is demoralizing as a driver. But he's really found his feet again, going through Force India and the likes of those guys, and yeah, I think we're going to see a good showing from Perez.
Mm.
I think Verstappen's got him hands down, though.
Yeah, we'll have to wait and see. I mean, it's certainly the... where would you put Perez? Would you put him above Ricciardo in terms of quality driver? No, I don't think so.
No,
I'd say probably this would be his biggest test since Danny.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. But unlike when he was racing with Ricciardo, right, the team has now been largely moulded around Max too.
Yeah, so he's not even that to come up against. The car's been moulded around Max. The team's moulded around Max.
Yeah.
He's got an uphill battle, but if anyone can do it, it's Perez.
What do you reckon about Merck?
I think they're going to be too good again.
Yeah.
I think they're just, you know, same. We'll roll again. I think we won't really see them struggle or have any huge challenges until next year when the rules change and some other teams have had some time to get on top of those rules. But I think it'll be closer. I think it'll be closer and they might not win as many races. Red Bull will be there and be there to spoil the party, but I still think, look, Lewis would be your odds-on favourite for number eight.
Mm.
And
it's a big year for Valtteri, though.
Massive year for Valtteri. He's got to pull his finger out and really take it to Lewis this year. Otherwise, I don't think I'll see him in Formula One much longer.
No, it's you'd almost say after George Russell's race last year in Bahrain that Mercedes have already signed them on the contract, saying, mate, you guys are in no matter what.
Yeah.
And both Valtteri and Lewis are on one-year contracts as well. But Lewis, you'd say, he chalks up an eight.
He's gone.
Hang the helmet up, mate. There's you're nothing to prove anymore.
No. He'll race Formula E or something.
Yeah, or if they'd come to Bathurst. But the one to watch out for this year for me, even though they've already talked it down, would be Mick Schumacher. It'd be good to see him... I mean, he's got a lot...
The name on the grid again. But, he's got a lot to come up against driving for Haas. He's not going to, you wouldn't expect him battling for podiums, that's for sure.
No, definitely not. Although, put it this way, I expect him to start really slowly. I expect him to sort of fly under the radar. But traditionally, in all of the categories that he's raced in, from about a third of the way into the season, he really starts to pick up. Yeah. Now, Haas have already said that they've almost put the queue in the rack for the 2021 car.
Yeah.
So they're going to roll the dice and hope that they're not shit house.
Yeah.
Although, mind you, they were pretty average last year too. But how much that depends on what the power unit's like remains to be seen. But you got a top three? You reckon who's your
cars or drivers?
No, I'll go drivers.
All right. So top three, I'd have to put Lewis. Lewis is going to win the championship.
Yep.
Max will finish second. And I'm gonna throw one out there and just say I think Ricciardo is going to finish top three in the championship.
Whoa. Yeah, I'd have to agree with you first two. Third, that could be one of half a dozen. But if I go with last year's form, it's hard to disagree. But I reckon Lando would be somewhere between, Bottas, Danny, and maybe even Lando Norris.
And
Perez will be in the mix as well. Yeah. So from the first two, you'd almost suggest would be there or thereabouts. But from third all the way down, it could be
anybody's.
Yeah, and I wouldn't discount Aston Martin.
No,
not at all. I think
with Vettel there,
I haven't seen Seb smile like that since, well, at least his first year at Ferrari.
Yeah.
If the car's as good as what it was last year, which visually looks almost identical, if the paint scheme is anything to go by, give them the fucking world title.
It's
going to
be a rocket ship.
It's gorgeous. Yep. I love it. I think they'll be up there too. First two, definitely agree. Third, I can't pick. Yep. There's too many in there. V8. So, they had the Mount Panorama 500 last week. It was gut-wrenching. That should have been the 500 here.
Really. It should have been the 500 here, and it's taken away the charm from Bathurst.
Cheers.
I struggled to watch it, to be honest. It's just not got the same allure to it as having the 1,000 there. So,
nah.
They did what they had to do to quick fix it, but it would have been better starting off at Sydney Motorsport Park or picking something else.
Yeah, for background information, guys, the V8 supercars own the rights to the Bathurst 12-hour. So when you race at Bathurst, there's... five events that the racetrack, because it's a public road, there's five events over the course of the year that the track is closed, and the V8 supercars had two of them. So there was the 1000 and then there was the 12 hour. So traditionally the 12 hour was meant to start around about early to mid Feb. COVID put a cease to that, at least initially. So the V8 supercars had to fill the gap. And so, and then of course, you know, you had the Adelaide 500 fiasco where we lost that. Although from all reports, that was actually meant to be the season finale this year.
It was going to be the season finale, but
yeah, which would have been epic. Would have been nice. Would have been brilliant. Yeah. You know, to have a championship finale in Adelaide would have reminded me of the F1s. But so they had to do something quick, smart, and yeah. Do you do the night race at Eastern Creek or do you start at Mount Panorama? Well,
they had good intentions with starting it at Mount Panorama, but it does take away, like I said, from the allure of the 1000. You lock into that long weekend in October,
yep,
and you're ready to go for it. It just didn't have the same energy.
Yeah, obviously the crowd was a lot less, but you know they had top 10 shootouts and all that sort of stuff. And I think, you know what, I get the idea, and there's the TV and all that sort of stuff, but there's only one top 10 shootout at Bathurst,
yeah,
and that's Saturday afternoon at 5 o'clock in October.
Yeah,
like, there's no other, you know, that's been like that for, you know, 40 years. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't you know have top 10s here, there, you can't change that. But look, you know what it reminded me of is mid-90s where they had, you know, they had the V8 soup, the V8 category back then. I think 95 and 96 they did sprint races there, which was pretty cool. And it kind of reminded me of that. But yeah, they've only said that this year was just a one-off.
Yeah.
But our boy Todd, he had a mixed run.
He did. He did okay on Saturday.
Yeah.
He was just inside the top 10. I think he finished 10th on Saturday.
Yep.
And from all reports, they went a different direction with an engineering standpoint on Sunday and threw the kitchen sink at it, and the kitchen sink regurgitated everything that they threw at it and said that it was rubbish. So, unfortunately, he struggled on Sunday.
Yeah, he did. But I expect some big things from him this year. I reckon he'll be a top 10 title contender by the end of the season.
He'll be in the top 10 most of the year if they lock in on that setup. He's definitely... this year's his year to really make his stand.
Yeah, BJR have had a shit run at Bathurst over the last few years, though. I don't know what black cat that team's come across, but yeah, they've had a shocker.
It can be a part and parcel with running four cars as well. You know, you get too many mixed messages and too many directions to go in and all that sort of stuff. But they're a good team. They'll bounce back at Sandown in a couple of weeks. So
yeah, that's very much a... Triple Eight are expected to be favourite there, and they've got this thing as a season opener for like over the last half a dozen years where they're just untouchable.
Yeah.
And Van Gisbergen put on a clinic.
He did.
So there was some driver transfer, a lot of driver transfer, but also engineering changes too. Yep. So he's taken Dave Couchy, who was Wincup's engineer, and... Wincup's got Wes McDougall this year, who used to be with Marcus Ambrose
a long time ago.
Spent some time at Matt Stone Racing, which was Todd's old team.
Yeah.
So Wes has come in there now, and they've sort of you know, Jamie was great name. Jamie was not biased. No, not at all. If only I had his track record. Yeah. But he was in Struggle Street. Well, when I say Struggle Street, he had a fifth and a sixth, but it was miles off behind Giz.
30 seconds odd behind Gisbergen on Sunday.
So yep. Yep.
That's, he's got some work to do, but I think he'll bounce back at Sandown.
Yeah, but that's going to be an open title race, to be honest with you. I think Bathurst is certainly one of those unique tracks. DJR will come good. I mean, you've got Will and you've got Anton, and they're both really classy drivers. Tickford, especially under Cam this year, are going to be really quick.
He's looking on song.
My sleeper, I'd probably say, would be Team 18 with Frosty or Scott Pye.
Yep.
Your mate.
They're looking good. They were doing well last year. They did well this weekend. They got to get on top of their... qualifying pace.
Yep.
They struggled with that, and that hurt them a lot. And once you get stuck back in the back of the field, you're chewing tyres, you're chewing engine, you're doing way too much more than you need to do. I'm going to throw a different sleeper out there, and this team really come from nothing into something. And, you know, I expect that they'd be okay. And the driver's really good. Like, he's got good skills behind him.
Slatey. Yeah.
Like, look at what he did. And
yeah, I know.
He was on it.
Yeah.
And he was on one at Bathurst. I'm hoping that the car that they rebuild for Sandown is good and they get back into it. But, you know.
It's the old chassis that Waters and Ingle use when they did the Back to the Future car.
Yeah,
so we're talking the FGX. Time
it's come out of retirement to be a backup car.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, their team, they've got all the right ingredients. They've got Mirko, who was Anton's engineer last year at Penrite.
Yep.
So they've built a good team there, and I reckon they're one to be careful of.
His driving, and I agree with what you're saying, but his quality of drive over that weekend was that good. I mean, you put it this way. He's had 12 months on the sidelines. He did one race in the V8s, which was being Bathurst. Scotty Mac was Bathurst, yep. Which is back up to Scott McLaughlin. They end up finishing fourth.
Yep.
Right. You got Blanchard Racing that bought the old Milwaukee X Will Davison car.
Yep.
Right. They've had literally started from scratch. They do share a pit area with Tickford.
Yeah. They're a customer team.
Yeah. But to come out there and not only qualify in the top 10, then now the front row of the grid miss out on pole by a tenth.
Yeah.
Then until he, where he got transmission lock on a downshift before hitting Forest Elbow, which
locked in for a fourth.
Yeah, at least, if not, he probably could have got a third.
Yeah,
you know, it's a massive effort.
Huge,
brilliant effort. And I love the color scheme of that car.
Yeah.
That metallic blue, it's gorgeous.
Yeah,
they've done a really good job. And no, I agree. I reckon they'll if all things being fair and Slatey can maintain that sort of momentum throughout the year, there's no reason why he can't finish top 10.
No, 100%. He'll be up there. So,
yeah.
While we're on the topic of V8s, and this might be a topic or a segment that I can do every podcast, is I've got something that grinds my gears.
Oh, yes.
I've got something that grinds my gears.
Grind them. Go.
The starting grid.
Yep.
Poles on the wrong side for a standing start.
I think it's at
every track in Australia.
Really?
Every track, maybe even most tracks. I was trying to have a think during the week, and I was going to write a list of tracks that I could find that this doesn't happen, and I can't find them. But they always put pole on the inside of the track, you know.
Yeah.
That's the dirty side of the track.
Mm.
So,
especially at Bathurst, racing line's on the far
exactly.
right.
Exactly, and you know, Adelaide 500, the racing line goes across to the right-hand side before the pole line.
Mm.
Sandown, the racing line's on the right-hand side, but pole's on the left-hand side.
What have they done at the bend?
It's the same.
Really?
It's the same, yeah.
What pole's was the reason on the right-hand that? Side.
That's just how it's written in the rules. It's for a rolling start, I mean, it's fair because you move off at the same pace. But if you qualify pole, it's a disadvantage because you're starting on the dirty side of the grid.
Yep.
Now, in all seriousness, one each on the weekend. Slade, we've just beefed him up. He stood on it at the start of race one and that cost him. But you saw in the second race, Cam smoked Van Gisbergen off the start.
Yeah.
And Van Gisbergen is no slouch off the starting
line. No, he's generally pretty good.
So it'll be interesting. That's something that's got under my skin for a little while, grinds my gears, to use the motorsport terminology.
You want to know what grinds my gears? I'm glad you brought this up. And I was going to have it as a bit of a segue as well, Jamie's rant, but I'll go grinding gears. I like that. And this was on the weekend. So we'll take it back to karting. Right. Presentation. Fuck me, guys. Seriously. And this is to all drivers. The amount of go-karts that I see, right, be it from the juniors all the way up to top-end two-stroke, right, that look like they have been poorly maintained or looked after. They haven't been cleaned. There's tire marks and shit everywhere. I even saw guys that look like they haven't washed race overalls for about 3 or 4 weeks at a time. You know, and I won't mention names because, you know, that's not cool. But guys, put a bit of care into it. You know, if you're attracting sponsors and you want people to take interest in what you're doing and you rock up in this car and it looks like it's been through the Second World War, right? If I was a sponsor and I wanted to sponsor a guy, I want to have someone that's going to ensure that they're going to represent, right? Put a bit of effort into it. Clean your chassis, right? There was one driver that was remarking that tire marks all over the bodywork is like a badge of honor. You know, you want a bloody badge of honor, a fucking trophy cabinet. That's exactly. A badge of honor, right?
Yeah.
Clean your shit. Clean your carts, right? Even if it's between races, get a bit of room body cleaner, right? wipe it down, right, and have some representation.
I like all the juniors. They say, you know, I like to thank my mum and my dad for bringing me here. Maybe they can thank mum and dad for washing the suit and
yeah,
washing the
exactly
cart.
Right.
And,
exactly right. Exactly right.
They can get their suits washed in the weeks leading up
to the race. The kids actually look after their race suits. I'm talking about grown
adults.
Men,
yeah.
Adults.
Maybe they need to get onto their mum and dad and they can thank their mum and dad for washing their race suits instead of bringing them to the go-kart track.
Yeah, it's funny because I get a lot of guys that actually remark on how clean I keep my cart. And you know, there's a bit of a joke about, you know, obviously be at the arse end of the field, you know, passing anyone, all that sort of bullshit. For the first two or three corners of a race, that's when all the crap happens.
Yeah.
Right. And there's been many a time when my cart looks like it's gone through Star Wars. But it's just a bit of self pride. Like, you go out there, I want a gleaming, you know.
It's got to start the day looking good. I mean, you can't guarantee that you're not going to rub wheels with someone in race one or race two.
But yeah, exactly
right. At least
right.
Start the day looking pretty.
Yeah, exactly. You know, exactly. So, guys, girls, everyone, please look after your equipment. Look after your cart. It will look after you. All right. So that's I'm done with that. All right. MotoGP. We touched on that quickly. I know they've only just started testing, so there's been
a lot of news out.
Not a lot of news out apart from obviously a few rider changes, the big one being Rossi going to SRT.
Yep.
And Quartararo obviously moving over to the factory Yamaha team. And then, of course, you've got Jack Miller, who's gone to the factory Ducati. So I heard him speak the other day. I hadn't heard him speak for a little while. And he's becoming Italianized.
He's been Italianized for a long time.
Yeah.
Have you not really heard this before?
No, I don't know. It's... Well, I've heard him speak a couple of times. I think, yeah, Aussie accent. But I paid particular attention to him with the Ducati. And there's not much Australian left in him. You might get the odd twang here or there, but he's very Italianized.
I used to think he was a bogan Italian. he used to have, you know, mostly Italian with that Aussie twang to him. That's how I used to describe
yeah,
it.
Yeah, but... Nah, he's factory Jew.
Yeah.
He's
going to be good to watch.
I think he will. He's fast. Like, really fast. But I don't know, probably one too many incidents for me. I don't know whether that's a case of just pushing too hard.
Yeah, or he's had to ride the wheels off of the customer spec Ducati.
Pramac,
so,
yeah. But the other thing I noted too was the Rossi going to SRT and he's working, obviously he's riding with his protege, Morbidelli. And then you've got Vinales and Quartararo in the factory Yamaha. But over the course of the season, it was funny how the customer team, the SRT, right, was actually outperforming the factory team.
Well, they were running a year-old bike, though, weren't they? And And it must have been a better bike than the one
clearly.
They brought to 2020.
Yeah, clearly. But I know Rossi was saying that he was having a lot of issues with the Yamaha in terms of the direction that he wanted to head with development. So he's... this might be his last year, I'd say. I mean, he's, 42?
Yeah.
He's still a class act.
Massively.
You know, massively.
Still probably my favourite rider in MotoGP.
Likewise. Yeah. I mean, I remember when... Remember all the old RPM TV shows?
Yep.
And I remember watching him when he was in 125s, you know, and just seeing this guy's gun. Yep. Like, just the podium antics and all that sort of stuff. And he literally revolutionised MotoGP, you know.
Can drive a car too, by the way. Can drive
a
car.
He's a pretty he's a pretty handy steerer.
He is,
you know.
Yep.
I really want to, I would love to him, you know, the dream would be to see him win one more world title.
Yeah.
The odds of that happening are
slim to none.
But, you know, stranger things have happened.
He might win a world GT title or something if that's his fallback plan after motorbike.
Or a rally.
So he might get
his
get that dream, it just might not be on two wheels.
Yeah, exactly. But Marquez, won't he? You know, you don't know whether his shoulder surgery and his arm has been causing him some grief. And
I read they used a body double in their release videos for him. it's not actually Marc Marquez. They used a stunt double.
You know what, though? How mad. I mean, MotoGP, I'd say, arguably the best motorsport in the world.
Oh,
those guys, their balls are as big as their bikes. Like, it's... But that championship was epic last year. You know, like, it was just... I reckon just about every rider in that field wrote the book on how to try and lose the title.
Yeah.
And Mir came out on top in the end. But, another season like that, please.
Please.
Yeah.
It's just the whole way through that category, though. MotoGP, Moto2, Moto3, it's all stonkers.
It's intense.
It's absolutely mayhem. Like,
yeah.
All three categories, you tune in and you know you're not going to be left boring. So,
yep.
You know.
I love the fan base though. Like they've all got their massive following of each individual rider. Yeah, yeah. Like it's so good. I mean, credit to Dorma for marketing it the way they do, and their social media stuff and where their online shop. And I mean, the rider merchandise is epic.
Yeah,
absolutely. I mean, I went for a Rossi helmet this year, but you know, largely because of the bright yellow for Senna, who was
my stand out on the track, don't you?
That was the point.
Yeah.
You know, if I'm going to be losing, I'd rather look good losing. But also, you know, you can identify who's who on the track.
Yeah.
You know, whereas the rest of the field are just a sea of black and white helmets. You know, so yeah, objective achieved there. But yeah, but all the other rider merchandise is just nuts. You know, and the following is insane.
It's huge.
Massive. You know. But the thing for me would be what happens to the MotoGP when Rossi goes, because he's still got massive pulling power.
He does.
Massive. So who takes over that mantle and has that star following is going to be interesting to watch over the next couple of years. I think
they're on their eyes. It's Quartararo. I think he's going to be the new Rossi. He's already building the fan base, and he's doing quite a good job of it. He's always entertaining in his interviews and all that sort of stuff. So he'll be my number one go-to when Rossi retires. But
yeah,
interesting to see how he develops this year, the factory Yamaha squad.
Yeah, I've been too entrenched with Rossi. I've got to do what you got to do with Kimi and sit back and think who's going to be my next one. So might be Jack Arse, I don't know, we'll see.
He's good as well. Like he's got the larrikin personality that needs to be there. And when, you know, now that Rossi's gone a little bit more corporate and hasn't been on the podium, it's good to see Jacko get on there because he tears it up.
Yeah, exactly. So, no, this season I think is going to be another epic one. You know, Les Marquez comes back in, and who knows how long it's going to take for him to get back to form.
Dominant again.
But they had a shakedown at Qatar, so it's more like their pre-season test yesterday. And Stefan Bradl was actually fastest. So there was, but they were miles off the pace. Apparently, a 50k wind.
Dusty as.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was seconds off the pace. But they were miles off Vinales' pole last year. It didn't really count. But that's basically just the reserve riders and all that sort of stuff getting out there and just getting the bike.
Everyone's on the same track though, so it's still relative.
Yeah,
you know,
exactly.
They're all driving and riding in the same conditions, so you can read a little bit into it, but no one's going to have been pushing 100% or even probably 90%. But Qatar, I don't think they've had much on the track over the start of the new year period, so you can expect it to be a bit dirty. But I think as the track cleans up this week, we'll get a bit more of an idea of who's going to be where.
Yeah, cool. No, definitely look, going to keep an eye on that. But yeah, so over the course of the season, we'll definitely monitor and sort of try and give out all the goss and intel of what's happening across all those sports. But yeah, let us know, guys. Let us know what else you want to hear, how much detail you want on certain topics or racing categories, etc. It's your podcast just as much as it is ours. So I think that we'll call that a night, mate.
I reckon we've done a good job there.
Yeah. So hope you enjoyed it. And we'll look forward to speaking to you in a few weeks' time.